All right, we are back on the agenda with item 2015-2016, number 93, a rehearing on the threshold for voter approval of initiated constitutional amendments. And if the proponents come forward and just introduce yourselves for the record so we know you're here. Or council, if you want to. Oh, there. Okay. Yeah, if you want to just come up and introduce yourself for the record and then just state whether your proponents are present so that we can establish that.
Happy to do so. D. Weiser with the law firm Butler Snow. I'm here representing the proponents for 93 through 97, and the designated representatives, Greg Brophy and Dan Gibbs, are here with me.
Okay. And we've had three motions for a rehearing filed. The first one is from Mr. Polhill. Did you want to say anything in addition to what you filed? If you come up to the microphone. I know it's a long way to walk if your answer is no, but.
Well, already you know me well enough to know that I don't like to talk. So, yeah, I sent a subsequent email that provided some specifics. I think the main thing that about the single subject is that we're changing petition requirements, and at the same time we're changing election approval requirements, and that's clearly two subjects. The bigger one that really should be reflected in the title is the fact that we're repealing majority rule. And of course, a creative person can figure out how to word their thing in reverse so that they only need a minority then to win their idea.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Pahal? No. All right.
Regarding single subject or everything, or how do you want to?
Well, regarding single subject, I think we should take that up first. No?
No. Okay.
Mr. Forsyth, did you have anything you wanted to add on single subject? Or it looks like you have some other.
Yeah, I have some other jurisdictional grounds. Chris Forsyth here, registered elector from Wheat Ridge, representing myself. I've raised several objections to this title. The first is that we don't know whether a Colorado citizen is a proponent of this initiative. We do know that Mr. Brophy is a former legislator, and in the Colorado Statesman on March 4th of this year, they published a blurb that he was getting paid to, I'm going to use the direct language from the Colorado Statesman, he can promote a ballot measure to make it harder to amend the Constitution, was the language in the Colorado Statesman. It was an email that the Colorado Statesman regularly sends out. So from that email, it became aware that there was a filing at the Independent Ethics Commission. I went to the Independent Ethics Commission. They don't have their letter ruling available yet, but they did provide me a copy of the letter Mr. Brophy provided to the Independent Ethics Commission, which indeed says he's getting paid to promote an initiative. So that's what was the genesis of the objection regarding the citizen requirement. The right of the initiative is reserved only for citizens of Colorado. It's a right specific to Colorado. We know that Mr. Brophy is getting paid by someone else. So he's not the principal. He's a paid designated representative, which, to be honest, I don't see anything prohibiting a paid designated representative, and that's who needs to be here today. However, when you go back through the records on the website for the Secretary of State, at the initial meeting that was held by Legislative Council with Office of Legislative Legal Services there, the two people there are designated representatives here. And the Constitution requires that the proponents be at that meeting, not the representatives. So we don't know who the proponent of the measure is. Ostensibly, it's whoever is paying Brophy. So we don't have any guarantee whatsoever. In fact, we have exactly the opposite. We know that the proponent's not Brophy because he's getting paid by someone else.
Well, you're not contesting that he's a citizen of Colorado.
I'm not. He's been a legislator. But if we're, is the right of initiative out for sale? Is that what?
Well, is there any legal, is there any prohibition you can point to that, I mean, what if a corporation who is not a citizen wants to run an initiative?
In this case,
how would they get done?
In this case, well, and therein lies the problem, and that's the problem with these initiatives, is that they're trying to make the initiatives belong only to big money interests, the people you just mentioned. That's the danger with the initiative process in Colorado. It's being usurped and destroyed by the big money interests that who are paying Mr. Brophy. Now, it's all in the language of the Constitution. The Constitution does not allow a designated representative to be at that initial meeting with Office of Legislative Legal Services and Legislative Council. The Constitution requires that the proponents of the measure be there. We know from the admissions in the Statesman and Mr. Brophy's admission to the Independent Ethics Commission, he is not the proponent because he's getting paid by someone else. The Constitution requires the principal, not the agent.
If I may, Mr. Forsyth, first, and I may, it may be that opposing counsel will have some things to say about this, but as the Deputy Secretary of State pointed out, where is there anything in the law, any case you can point to, any statute, any constitutional provision that says payment to someone to be a proponent renders them not a proponent?
The fact that that hasn't been litigated, as you know, I don't do this stuff very often, is dumbfounding to me. It's been an oversight for eons. In the election statutes, we can't have voter fraud.
Is this not analogous? So there are somewhat similar situations that have been litigated. For example, it was found that the state of Colorado cannot prohibit payment to petition circulators. It's a First Amendment violation to do that. Yep. And also that you cannot require disclosure of the identity of petition circulators. Right. And that seems, one, quite analogous, although it's not really a legal argument, but absent any authority that the fact that someone's getting paid means they can't be a proponent, you know, we have a hard time disqualifying Mr. Brophy is a proponent.
Right. Petition circulators are a completely different situation, not analogous at all to this situation. Petition circulators only have to be U.S. citizens. They don't even have to be citizens of the state of Colorado. The Constitution of Colorado reserves the power of the initiative to the people of the state of Colorado. So unlike petition circulators, you do have to be a citizen of the state of Colorado to propose a constitutional amendment.
And you've already conceded that Mr. Brophy is a citizen of the state of Colorado.
But he's not the proponent. He's being paid from someone else. I'm saying that the Constitution, in the language that is currently in the Constitution, prohibits what is going on here today, and a construction that would allow that what is going on is fraud. It's allowing out-of-state interests to come make Colorado law.
And one thing I'd point out, too, is while as a title board we're not, I don't know what we are legally, we're not exactly an administrative agency per se, but, you know, the judiciary has the right to say that duly enacted statutes are unconstitutional. We as the title board don't, and we have a statute that says, contrary to your interpretation, that having designated proponents designated representatives be the people who do all this stuff is on the books, which we have to follow.
Well, that's fine, and I'm not objecting to those statutes. The Constitution and the statute require at the initial meeting with Office of Legislative Legal Services and Legislative Council, not the meetings here, the meetings over there at the Capitol, that the proponents be there. I've got the Constitution right here. It's in Article 5, Section 1, Paragraph 5. Not later than 2 weeks after submission of the original draft, unless withdrawn by proponents, the legislative research and drafting offices of the General Assembly shall render in their comments to the proponents of the proposed measure at a meeting open to the public. And that's where the proponents can select their designated representatives. Indeed, they're required to. I'm saying that, as a matter of law, he's not a proponent because he was paid to be there that day and he's paid to be here today. The proponents, who's ever paying him?
Let's deal with this issue first and then get back to the other jurisdictional questions. Mr. Weiser, you want to come up and respond to that?
Again, for the record, D. Weiser, I'd submit this is neither the time nor the place for this conversation. What we're supposed to be doing today is considering whether the petition contains more than one subject and whether the title you've selected at the last meeting is fair and accurately reflects the intention of the proponents. And that's what Section 107 says. And if there's some jurisdictional issue that should have been raised 2 weeks ago or maybe needs to be raised in a court of competent jurisdiction, but I'd submit it's not appropriate today.
Mr. Gruskin, do you want to come up and talk about your petition for a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Gruskin on behalf of the objector, Timothy Markham. First of all, let me say that Mr. Markham and I on his behalf stand apart from the other objections that have been made as to jurisdiction. And neither, I don't endorse them. I don't find any particular authority, either legal or moral, on the behalf of the ones that have been suggested that Mr. Brophy somehow, in light of his candor about whatever compensation he may be receiving, is inherently unable to sit as a proponent of this measure. So I just want to make sure that it's clear to the board that I'm disassociating myself from the prior remarks. The single subject arguments that we have raised really, I wish I would have been more specific, but I think the point is clear nonetheless. Number one, we believe that because this measure changes the capacity of the voters, both in as to an initiated measure and as to a referred measure, it's changing the powers of the voters in the first instance to propose and adopt a constitutional amendment, and in the second instance, it changes the power of the legislature to do so. Secondly, because of this dichotomy, it also changes the process associated, the voting process rather than the proposal process associated with either an initiated or referred constitutional amendment. We believe those are separate subjects and barring questions from the board, I have nothing to add.
Questions? No. Mr. Weiser, you want to respond to the single subject jurisdictional arguments that have been outlined by the three?
Again, for the record, D. Weiser, I really will stand by our conversation 2 weeks ago that the single subject here really is making it more difficult to amend the Constitution. It doesn't matter who proposes that amendment, whether it's the people through the petition process or the General Assembly. By way of referral to the people. This is about applying a rule to both of those circumstances, or two rules to both of those circumstances, where what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and making it more difficult to amend the Constitution and encouraging people to use statutory vehicles rather than constitutional ones to try and form policy of the state.
Any questions? All right. Any discussion on the single subject, and then we'll move from there?
No.
Yeah, I still think it's a single subject. On the other issue raised by Mr. Forsyth, we don't generally formally vote on each and every motion for rehearing. We just grant them in part and deny them in part. But to the extent that we would consider that argument, I don't think there's any case law that indicates a proponent can't get paid. He's not contesting that Mr. Brophy is a citizen. I think the law is pretty clear that any two citizens can bring a initiative, and who's paying them or what's going on in the background isn't really of concern to the board.
And I agree on single subject and on the other concerns. I would have concern whether we would be able to do anything, even if we thought there was a problem there. And then I would also note there are a whole bunch of factual unproven assertions that I don't think we're in a position to really fact-find about what's going on behind the scenes, and I would not consider that our role either. So I don't know if we need to make a motion on that, but I don't see a problem, or at least not something that would be within our purview.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Then I would move that the board deny all three motions for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-1693 to the extent that they allege that the board lacks jurisdiction to set a title, whether due to the status of the designated representatives or on single subject grounds.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That takes us to the language of the initiative, and I'll just let any of the petitioners for rehearing, if you have anything you want to add beyond your motions, if you want to come up.
I've been working on drafting a title today.
Can you just state your name?
Oh, sorry, Chris Forsyth. And instead of, I believe, as I said in the motion, making it more difficult as a catchphrase, and what it really does is increases the consensus of voters required. So I would prefer to read an amendment to the Colorado Constitution, increasing the consensus required to amend the Colorado Constitution in certain instances, because it's not requiring it in every instance. So it should say, to amend the Colorado Constitution in certain instances by increasing the percentage of votes needed to pass a proposed new constitutional amendment or an amendment that revises a provision of the Constitution. So I think there's something getting lost here, that there's two different types of amendments. One is the amendment whole, and that's usually what people think of when they think of a constitutional amendment. A separate type of an amendment is one where you go into a current provision and cross out a word or two or whatever and put in new words. The public needs to know that this type of provision applies to both, and that's important because the first version of that before it's revised was adopted by majority vote. So I would say, or an amendment that revises a provision of the Constitution from a majority to at least 55% of the votes cast, and then have a phrase saying, or allowing 45.1% of the people to prohibit such amendment, yet retaining a majority vote requirement for possible constitutional amendments that only remove language from the Constitution. So what it tries to do is separate the different categories of amendments that this initiative would create.
Okay.
I assume you don't have copies of what you just read for us.
I hand-wrote it as you all were meeting.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Mr. Grieskin, you have anything? I won't ask Mr. Polhill since he doesn't. No, I think he's good.
This is Mark Grieskin on behalf of Mr. Timothy Markham. The first argument that is raised is that this phrase, making more difficult to amend the Constitution, is a catchphrase. It is, as you know, something that the proponents argued for all five of their measures, and I'm sure you'll consider it due course as to all five. I do think that there is information that, unlike what the board considered last time, which is that this is really language that is, you know, either neutral or can be considered by either proponents or opponents to be a fair assessment. I think this was strategically chosen language. And if I could, I'd like to present the board with a couple of exhibits that are from the parent organization that really came up with these ideas. If I can just hand them to Mr. Ward.
Sure.
The two documents I've handed you, Exhibit A is a document from Building a Better Colorado. And Exhibit B is likewise a document from Building a Better Colorado, both public documents available on the web. Exhibit A, it comes from 2011 and reflects some discussions that happened several years ago. And on page 2 of that document, in the marked paragraph, it discusses a process whereby there were over 1,400 people who were surveyed. The conclusion was, and I quote, "The consensus among the 1,400 who attended the meetings was clear. While important to retain citizen initiatives to change statute, the ballot process should be reformed to make it more difficult to amend the Constitution." And then again on page 5, it is clear that that conclusion emanates from one of three questions that was asked of those attendees, the third question being, is it time to make it more difficult to amend the Constitution? So that is the groundwork. If you take a look then at what has happened in this most recent report, which was just issued by this group on page 2, as they indicate, they conducted a thorough series of interviews with 2,000 community leaders in over 30 meetings, and they say in the marked paragraph, quote, "We conducted thorough quantitative and qualitative research, thorough polling and focus groups to refine policy options and to help identify potential solutions that could be addressed by voters or the legislature. And the one that pertains here, the specific language that they cite, is make it more difficult to amend the state constitution." We think that there is not just some vague supposition that this is somehow geared to engender a particular prejudice on behalf of this measure. They figured it out. They had a long process stretching back years. This year they've undertaken polls and focus groups to make sure that that language that was so vigorously advocated in your last meeting is in the actual ballot question. And we think that that, as a function of what you know, which you could not have known 2 weeks ago, makes it clear that this is, in fact, a catchphrase. While we disagree with Mr. Forsyth's description of what the measure should say, what your title should say, I apologize, we do think that what this really is about is changing and making it more difficult to exercise the fundamental right of initiative. And let's be honest, making it more difficult to amend the Constitution is not a legal change. It is a qualitative assessment of the measure. And if you're going to qualitatively assess it, which we think you ought not to do, you ought at least go to the nub of the issue, which is undermining or at least cutting back on the fundamental right of initiative. We also think that your use of the or reference to language, removing language from the Constitution, does not parallel what the measure says. I don't know what it means to say to repeal a provision. I would have thought that repealing a provision would have been a subsection or a section or an article of the Constitution. But removing language could be a single word or a couple of words. Maybe that's what they intended. I don't know. But I think that the job of the board, obviously, is to reflect the measure. And I think the measure does speak to provision or provisions of the Constitution. And then we think that there ought to be clarity that this is not just an doesn't apply just to an initiated, but also to a referred measure. Thank you.
Mr. Weiser.
Thank you. For the record, D. Weiser. Don't believe at all that there's a catchphrase here. I think you know the rules as well as I, but they have to be words that work in favor of a proposal without contributing to the voter's understanding. A brief phrase that's used in advertising or promotion would be a catchphrase. I've thought about making T-shirts that say, make it more difficult to amend the Constitution, but I don't think they'd sell very well. And the fact that there are three people here opposing this measure suggests that they would think that, in fact, making more difficult to amend the Constitution might engender a no vote. And so I don't see how at all there could be a catchphrase issue here. the court has only four times disapproved measures for catchphrase, and they've approved multiple issues in the face of a catchphrase challenge, including things like right to health care choice, management of growth, preservation of the social institution of marriage. What you set, was an accurate description of the measure. We are not denying it is, in fact, our goal to make it more difficult to amend the Constitution, whether it be an amendment which is initiated by petition or whether it is one that is referred to the people by the General Assembly. So I submit we don't have a catchphrase, and I believe that the measure or the title that you set 2 weeks ago is an accurate description of the intent of the measure.
All right. I have time to testify. Oh, you did? Okay. Go ahead. Want to come up?
Robert Chase of the Colorado Coalition for Patients and Caregivers. It's difficult to follow your proceedings remotely because the internet feed keeps on getting switched on and off. I'd just like to echo Mr. Forsyth's analysis. The proponents have not come forward. The General Assembly and the political establishment of this state have determined to overbear Tabor rather than ever comply with it. We see no spending referenda on the ballot to raise new revenue to rebuild roads or bridges or to deal with problems in education. What we do see are supposed citizens initiative, which are being put forward by cat's paws for that establishment that does not want its fingerprints on a referred proposal, okay, a proposition of the General Assembly. This is the proper way this should have been brought forward. Mr. Brophy represents that political establishment, but he cannot reasonably be deemed to be the proponent.
We've already dealt with that jurisdictional issue.
Then I trust that you are going to stop this. It is correct to say that if you do act now knowingly, apprised of the facts, apprised of the admission by Mr. Brophy that he is being paid to do this as opposed to being the principal, then you are furthering a fraud. The OLLS needs to be called to account.
Okay,
its lawyers need
you.
To be
okay.
Disbarred.
This is totally out of order.
Any lawyers
I already
involved
told
in this should
have
be disbarred
this
if
issue,
you permit this to continue.
You can pursue your remedies elsewhere. You need to have a seat. We're done with that discussion. All right.
The will of the people is overboard. Is that correct?
Okay. On the first issue, that was brought up regarding whether or not making it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution is a catchphrase. I think we're back to the discussion we had a few weeks ago on alcohol in the grocery stores and whether or not necessarily using it in the ad is a catchphrase. I'm not sure it is. I also think that, I don't think that's dispositive of the question. I also don't think that it characterizes it in a way that's unfair. I think there are many people who will believe that making it more difficult is a bad thing. And so I don't think it suggests an answer or suggests how you should vote on it or brings up emotive responses that are necessarily positive, may bring up negative emotive responses. I do agree on the second issue that Mr. Gruskin brought up with regard to removing language, that you could potentially have an or that got removed, I suppose, and that would completely change the meaning of a statute. Something could become a list of conjunctive instead of disjunctive. So maybe we should be a little bit more clear about what we're removing.
I'll add my two bits to both of those things. First, I agree with you completely on that. I don't think we have a catchphrase at all. I think to my ear, it's certainly less catchphrasey than talking about limiting the fundamental right of initiative. On the second issue, the actual language of the proposed initiative says limited to repealing in whole or in part any provision of this Constitution. It doesn't just say any provision. So that or that and or that
you know, two or three words to me is in part. So I like the removing language, and quite frankly, I'm quite content with the title as we said it last time.
I agree as to the catchphrase. With respect to removed language from the Constitution, I can see the point there. You know, removing language, I'm not sure if that's exactly the same as repealing in whole or in part any provision. You know, perhaps if we copied the words from the initiative itself, it would be more precise, but I don't know that I necessarily have a problem with it as it's written either. Suzanne, did you have thoughts about language for that last portion?
Well, Mr. Gruskin, what was your suggestion on that, that we just track the language of the measure?
Mark Gruskin for Mr. Markham. I think that the suggestion that's been made that you just track the language, it's what, five words in from the initiative, repeals in whole or in part any provision, seven words, is accurate, it is complete, is understandable. I mean, what's not to like?
I don't know, Mr. Weiser. What's not to like?
D. Weiser, for the record, if that's a change the board wants to make, we don't object to that.
So it's really up to you two. I'm really fine either way, if you like it the way it is.
I'd be interested in seeing it. Only repeals in whole or in part any provision of the Constitution. I think I'm slightly more comfortable with that, but I wasn't particularly uncomfortable with removed language.
Well, the removed language was my idea, but, you know, we're always safe tracking the language of the initiative. It doesn't bother me to make the change if you prefer it.
Yeah. I just think if the opponent and proponent are in agreement, we might as well just track the initiative.
Okay.
Do you want to move the change, or do you want to?
So do we, is this move the change or move for?
Well, are we done with
I
the
think
discussion?
So.
Okay. Then, Steve, why don't you go ahead and just accept the change. I'll read it in, and then we can. So as it reads now, it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution, making it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution by increasing the percentage of votes needed to pass a proposed constitutional amendment from a majority to at least 55% of the votes cast, unless the proposed constitutional amendment only repeals in whole or in part any provision of the Constitution. So when we did these this morning, we took up each motion for rehearing separately.
Okay.
I think in this case, though, we changed a part of the wording, which is referenced in each of them. So I don't know. We could probably take them up together if you want, however you want to make the motion.
Okay. Let's see. I would move that we grant the motions for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-16 number 93, only to the extent that we have amended the staff draft as it now appears on the screen, and that we deny all three motions in all other respects.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That takes us to initiative number 2015-2016, number 94. Mr. Weiser, you want to come up and introduce yourself and just state whether your proponents are here?
Thank you. D. Weiser with the law firm Butler Snow, representing the proponents. With me are the designated representatives, Greg Brophy and Dan Gibbs.
So we have, again, three motions for rehearing. Mr. Polhill, unless you come up, I'll assume you don't have anything to add other than what you've... Oh, you're coming up.
Yeah, I should have said when I spoke before that I meant my comments to apply to all five, 93, right. 94, 95, 96, right. 97.
So for the record, so that you all aren't in the position of having to repeat yourself, we'll go ahead and incorporate the comments from number 93 into the record for number 94. And so my questions that I ask from this point on will just pertain to whether you have anything additional to add from 93. Okay, thank you.
And I oppose repeal of majority rule, and that should be reflected in the title, repeal of majority rule.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Forsyth, did you have anything you want to add?
It's addressed in the written motion, but the adding language, I mean, the question the drafting of this raises, if you remove enough language and you put in less language, have you added language? Technically, you haven't added words, you haven't added letters in numerical count, as in adding, but you've changed it. So I think it's confusing. Well, everything else was said previously with it. I think it's a misleading title, but especially with the provisions about adding words. I think that's deceptive.
Okay. Mr. Gruskin?
Nothing to add, Madam Chair. I would say that, and I apologize to the board, I indicated that there were three single subject arguments, and Roman 2A1 actually was transposed from another motion for rehearing in this amalgamation of measures. So I asked the board not to consider that, not that you would have, because it doesn't really relate, but nonetheless.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Weiser.
For the record, D. Weiser. Mr. Forsyth may have a problem with the way the measure is drafted, but the title really uses the words of the measure in terms of talking about adding words or phrases, or words or numbers, excuse me. And so I think the title you've set accurately describes the measure.
Okay. Thank you. Discussion by the board?
Yeah, just briefly, I do want to address Mr. Forsyth's arguing about the deceptiveness of the language. Just that with the adding, I agree to a point in the sense, I do think there is some ambiguity there. I also agree, though he didn't say it expressly, with Mr. Weiser. I think, you know, that ultimately the enforcing agencies, you know, the Secretary of State and the General Assembly, not the title board, have the authority to interpret those kinds of ambiguities. You know, we're not supposed to consider the effects of measures in our thing. And also, in this specific case, I do think there is some guidance. At the last hearing, I believe that Mr. Weiser testified that this initiative in 93, which is more clear as to the removing of words, are intended to have the same substantive effect, which I think could guide that kind of future interpretation. So I recognize that there's some ambiguity. I don't think it rises to the level of being deceptive or being something that we can address.
I don't see any need to change the title as we fixed it 2 weeks ago.
Well, it is changed to the extent that we... Oh, no, we didn't do that. Okay. Yeah, you're right. All right, then someone want to make a motion?
Sure. I move that we deny all three motions for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-16, number 94.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right, that takes us to proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 95. And I know that some of the arguments from 93 and 94 are, again, restated in the motions in 95. And so we'll, to the extent that they apply in 95, we'll incorporate 93 and 94. And then Mr. Weiser, you want to just introduce yourself?
For the record, D. Weiser with the law firm Butler Snow, representing the proponents. With me are the designated representatives, Greg Brophy and Dan Gibbs.
All right. And Mr. Polhill, anything to add? Okay. That's a no. Mr. Forsyth, anything you wish to add in addition to what you stated in 93 or 94?
This one, I didn't challenge single subject in 93 or 94. This violates single subject. It's got two components. It increases the requirement to get on the ballot, and then number two, it increases the consensus required to pass the amendment once it's on the ballot. The general public, when you go out and talk about these initiative petitions or get signatures, which I've done, they don't understand this process as readily as you all do, okay? And I think it's confusing for an average voter to be presented with, you know, something about a petition and then something about a majority to get on the ballot raised to 55%. It's a lot for the average person to process, especially in something as quick as a voting booth. And in this measure, indeed, voters could support one of these provisions and not like the other. So they don't seem particularly congruous. So object on single subject. I think the rest of it is in the written motion. And some has already been addressed here today. So that's all I have to add.
So I'm sorry to do this, but I have a bill that I need to go testify on over at the legislature. So I think I'm just going to step out and let the other two board members continue. We'll still have a quorum. So, Jason, if you want to go on.
Okay.
We'll probably be done before I get back. So.
Yes. Who is up at the mic currently? Mr. Gruskin. Did you have comments? And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is for real, or are you just trying to get
No, I have my omnibus election bill on there.
Mark Gruskin on behalf of Timothy Markham. First of all, as to single subject, the argument that was incorrectly raised on 94 is correctly raised here on 95, which is that this is both a substance and a process change. And this is really governed by two cases, the Title In Re number 43, where there was both a substantive change and a process change, substantive rights change and a process change. And it also, frankly, the case that was cited in 2014, In Re Ballot Title number 76, where the court looked at the recall measure that had everything to do with increasing the eligibility for recall to appoint of officials. Court there said that a single subject is the triggering and conduct of an election. And increasing the percentage from, changing the percentage scheme to require signatures in every Senate district is a process change. But giving effect to a constitutional amendment is it, and changing the fundamental nature with which the right of initiative is exercised and given effect, that is a substantive change. And we would argue that these two don't marry up as just an elections kind of measure. And we think that the other arguments we've raised in terms of the legislative and initiated measures and rights being changed are important. Mr. Chair, would you like me to also, just for expediency's sake, address clear title issues as well?
Before we get to that, first, I guess I'd like a little clarification. Is your argument that this single subject we've set, making it more difficult, or let's see, to amend the Colorado Constitution, is essentially an umbrella title, or is it something a little different than that?
Well, first of all, and this goes really to clear titles, I would suggest that making it more difficult isn't accurate. But to the extent that that is what you've used, yes, I would say that that is one of those broad petitions type of subjects that the court has said is, as you pointed out, is really an umbrella and not a subject.
And, sorry, I'm looking for something in one of the other motions, and I can't quite find it. So I apologize for that. This is what happens when you have too much paper in front of you. Was there, sir, Mr. Forsyth made an argument that this was a situation where, you know, you could, the two subjects he identified, you know, the signature requirements in the Senate districts versus the supermajority voting requirements aren't necessarily improperly connected because someone could easily favor one and not the other. Do you want to speak to that anymore? Do you agree with that?
I don't have any opinion about Mr. Forsyth's suggestion that
okay.
this is. I honestly, unless they are really apparent, the separateness of what voters would do, I don't have a divining rod. And, you know, I can't do a mind meld. And I think it's really hard to be able to know, for you as board members, to know. And that's why I'm not rooting it in that argument, because I mean, there are definitely cases that have been litigated and that have come up where the court's been able to discern that voters could easily have feet in two very different buckets. I don't see this one. It didn't occur to me. It seems to me it's not nearly as salient as the issue of whether or not you can both change a procedure and change a substantive right.
And how are both of these things not at a fundamental level procedures?
Because giving effect to a constitutional amendment that historically would have been given effect because it got 50.1% of the vote, that is an expression of, that's the ultimate act in the conduct of the fundamental right of initiative.
Well,
it's not just a procedure.
Isn't something that this is going to the supermajority vote on? Part of it, right?
Correct.
I mean, can't the same be said of not ever getting an initiative on a ballot that previously you would have gotten on the ballot?
Because of the signature requirement, you mean?
Yeah, I don't see how one is more substantive than the other versus them both being essentially procedural requirements with substantive effects.
Here's why that single subject of making it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution is wrong. What the 55% does is arguably, and I think this is only arguable, make it more difficult to put a measure before voters. It doesn't necessarily make it more difficult. The act of amending the Constitution has to do with the actual vote that's conducted and not the process that leads up to the expression of the public will that the Constitution either ought to include or ought to omit a particular provision or ought to change a particular provision. I think that's fundamentally different. And I think the court has acknowledged in the petitions case that the petitioning process is different from the ultimate election or the ultimate measure upon which people express the popular will.
Any other comments from the board?
Not for Mr. Gruskin.
Okay. Mr. Weiser, do you want to respond?
Again, for the record, D. Weiser, I disagree with Mr. Gruskin that we have both a procedural measure and a substantive measure here. I think they are one and the same. It's going to take a certain number of signatures from each Senate district to get on the ballot. It's going to take a certain number of votes to pass that. I think they are the same in terms of being a procedure. I think the title making it more difficult is an accurate statement. It's reflected in the measure. I think if it weren't going to make it more difficult, there wouldn't be three motions for rehearing here today. I think just the process of you can look at the number of measures in Colorado that wouldn't have passed if there had been a 55% requirement, and there would have been a number that wouldn't have passed. You can look at how hard it would be to get signatures in 35 Senate districts, which my clients are going to do for this measure, and they already tell me how difficult that is. I think it's just all reflective of how difficult this process will be at the end of the day, and that's our goal.
Okay. Any other comments from anyone out here or from the board on single subject?
Not on single subject.
Okay. Ready for a motion?
Yeah. I move that the motions for rehearing, the three motions for rehearing, be denied to the extent that they challenge the jurisdiction of the board on single subject.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Good, that passes. And I guess now we're just talking to, speaking to the language set by the board at the last meeting, and I guess we'll start with Mr. Weiser. Do you have any comments regarding it?
For the record, D. Weiser, no, I have no comments. I'd like it to leave it as it is.
Okay.
It's accurate, reflective of our intent.
All right. Mr. Forsyth?
I somewhat covered it earlier, but this is just completely confusing to the average voter. If it's, well, you've already ruled it's a single subject, but those, they need to be delineated more. One affects the process of getting on the ballot, which is a separate and distinct process from the number of voters needed to vote yes in support of the amendment at the polls. And I believe that it needs to be more remedial so people understand that the first prong of it regards getting on the ballot, and the second prong of it regards the number of votes necessary to pass the amendment.
Would it help with that concern, which I think you may have a good point, if after on line four, after it says in each state Senate district, we indicate something about to get on the ballot or to be presented to the electors, because I do think that may be missing, because it just says requiring that any petition be signed by at least 2% of the registered electors who reside in each state Senate district, but then doesn't say for what. And I could see potential confusion as to whether that first piece enacts the initiative as opposed to just puts it on the ballot and then requiring the vote in the second piece.
I mean, yes, I think something getting on the ballot should be in there, and I don't know if you've gotten away from your and in connection therewith phrases, and maybe this is one where we need the in connection therewith, because two things are happening, making it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution, and in connection therewith requiring that any petition for a citizen initiative constitutional amendment be signed in order to get on the ballot, and increasing the percentage of votes. So you know you've got two things there. I don't know, just an idea.
Okay.
I'd be interested in hearing what Mr. Weiser thinks of that.
Okay. Mr. Weiser.
Possible addition.
Again, for the record, D. Weiser. We'd be satisfied with the title as it was originally set by you for 2 weeks ago. I think it's clear. In fact, I think Article 5, Section 1 of the Constitution already uses the phrase about a petition being signed by at least a certain number of voters, 5%, I think, is what it says. So that language is pretty similar to what's already in the Constitution, but I don't have a strong objection to the addition you propose to make.
If we were to add something, do you think the language on there now to qualify for the ballot would be accurate and acceptable to proponents?
Yes.
Okay.
So I like having something there. Divide it up a little bit. I don't know that we necessarily need an in connection therewith, although I don't think I'd be opposed to that.
Again, for the record, D. Weiser, I think we do oppose that. I think this is a much more user-friendly question than the historic convention of in connection therewith. That's pretty legalistic if we're trying to make this more understandable. I don't see that it adds any value.
All right. Are there any other comments, Mr. Gruskin?
We argued earlier that the phrase making it more difficult to amend the Constitution was prohibited catchphrase and misleading. We argue here that it is a catchphrase, that it's misleading and inaccurate. Let me tell you why it's inaccurate. If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to hand you exhibits C, D, and E. Which we think are probably instructive for the board's consideration in this process. Sorry, I have it. So let me tell you about exhibits C, D, and E. They are from a website, Building a Better Colorado, a group with which the proponents have acknowledged their connection. And if there's any question, the press release when they issued the measure or filed the measure, excuse me, indicates that this is their measure held on the heels of the Building Better Colorado exercise. Exhibit C is really nothing more than a printout of the website for Building Better Colorado. And as you can see on page 5 of 6, there is an issues overview brief, and it says download the PDF. And since I couldn't do that for you here, I showed you how I got to what I got, which is I downloaded the PDF, which is Exhibit D. Exhibit D is a series of questions that they asked in their process, and the way that they analyzed their policy priorities. And on page 4 of their various options related to the initiative process, they proposed this: require signatures for citizen-initiated amendments to the Constitution to be gathered from different geographic areas across the state, such as congressional or legislative districts, to increase consideration of statewide impact. Then they put together pros and cons on the next page. And the first con argument that they proposed to that proposal was, doesn't impact which measures end up on ballot based on other states' experience. So it is inaccurate to say that it's going to make it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution if the proponents of the measure, through the website that has sponsored this entire effort, acknowledge that it won't impact which measures end up on the ballot, not based on conjecture or qualitative assessment, but based on other states' experience. You cannot say that this measure, which includes the 55% provision as part of the subject of making it more difficult, in fact, will achieve that end. And therefore, it would be inaccurate to use the phrase which has been so strongly urged upon you, because the proponent's sponsoring organization acknowledged that's not the case. And in fact, there is no evidence in front of the board. There wasn't at the first hearing, and there hasn't been here. Maybe there will be. But there, if you take a look at the various states that do require some sort of geographic dispersion of signatures, it doesn't change the initiative process. So it would be inaccurate, other than to maybe curry favor with those who want to make it more difficult, to use that phrase at all, we would suggest. Certainly to use it as the single subject summation, because it's not. And to the extent that you agree that it's inaccurate, I'd suggest that you have the jurisdiction to revisit your single subject decision, because we think that too is by definition inaccurate if the proponent's sponsoring organization is to be believed. We've remade a number of the arguments that we made earlier. We also believe that there are trapdoors built into this measure that will be a surprise to voters. That is, that they won't know that the number of signatures that you need to get is a function of when you start your petition drive. And therefore, petition drives in the same two-year cycle will have, could have, radically different petition requirements in order to meet that 2% number. The same is true whenever a Senate district line is redrawn. And to the extent that those are relevant considerations for voters to know that this is not a uniform signature requirement, it is simply a uniform percentage requirement that will be applied differently depending upon the timing of the approval of the petition format. That is relevant, as is the fact that this affects both initiated and referred constitutional amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gruskin. Mr. Weiser.
For the record, D. Weiser. I think in response to Mr. Gruskin's argument about this PDF measure or PDF document, to the extent that that's relevant, you should look at page 4 of 6, which is the lead-in to the pros and cons, when it talks about the states that require signatures to be collected by a congressional district. To the extent that the con is correct, and I wouldn't concede that it is, it would be much easier to collect signatures from the 6 congressional districts, which in fact was something that we considered in drafting here, because in Colorado you could drive up and down I-25 and pretty easily get the signatures. There's no really added burden to collecting signatures by congressional district. But when you have to go to Cortez and Ray and La Junta, I think that's a materially different measure, and it will be more difficult. We're already experiencing, or we will soon experience that ourselves in voluntarily complying with this.
All right. Thank you. Any questions?
The lead-in says congressional or legislative. It doesn't just say congressional. So the context was matches initiatives 95, 96, 97. Secondly, and I would bet that the proponents, individual proponents, might agree with me, I would rather, and I'll bet you a lot of paid circulators would rather gather signatures in the middle of the summer in Breckenridge or even in Ray than on the 16th Street Mall. And lastly, we're in an era now where you can literally email out or put as a PDF on a website a petition form. Anybody can access it. You don't have to come to Denver to get that form and then take it back to your Senate district. So the thought that this is inherently going to make it more difficult, notwithstanding the admission that it hasn't and doesn't, seems to me to be at odds with, if I'm getting paid $5 a signature, I'd much rather be in Cortez, I'd much rather be in Breckenridge than I would be on the 16th Street Mall or in Pueblo or any place up and down the Front Range.
So are you making the argument that this PDF is a concession on behalf of the proponents, that the portion of initiative number 95 requiring a signature by at least 2% of the registered electors in each state Senate district does not actually make amending the Colorado Constitution more difficult?
That's correct.
Okay.
For the record, D. Weiser, I point out that this PDF has a date on it of November 2015. We're a bit away from that, and thinking has evolved. And so I don't think we can be held to what somebody prepared in the context of this citizen process to gather information. I'd also submit that I imagine petition circulators who are going to stand on the corner in Cortez are going to demand more per signature than they're going to demand to collect signatures on the 16th Street Mall.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, yes, Mr. Forsyth.
I just want to make sure that we've said that everything we've said so far is, you know, regards this initiative as well. This initiative kind of gets ahead of itself because 97 expressly addresses the Senate requirement, and I want to make sure that that is taken into consideration here, because we did have objections in the 97 motion that we didn't expressly state in the, what are we on, 95, regarding what, how this title fails to inform the voters of the signature requirement. Like, voters need to know that there's still an overall encompassing 5% of votes for the Secretary of State requirement that's still there, but yeah, they don't know that the Senate requirement is in addition to that. So I just want to make sure that all those objections are raised here. And since it's been brought up, as someone who has put a PDF initiative petition on a website and where people can go and download it themselves, I can tell you that getting people to do that is, although easy for them to do, not nearly as easy as asking them to sign it in person. So,
and I think,
be that as it may.
Yeah, just on that, just for clarification, I believe Mr. Weiser was talking about downloading the form so that someone could print it out and then circulate it that way. I mean, I believe you still have to, unless I'm wrong.
You still have to circulate.
Oh, Mr. Gruskin, excuse me.
You still have to circulate. That's the point. You have to download, yeah, download, print.
Okay, I just want to make sure we were all on the same page. Okay. With all that, I guess I will comment a bit. First, on the issue of the subject being inaccurate, I would point out that the evidence, if that's what we call it, that Mr. Gruskin brought us, said that cons doesn't impact which measures end up on ballot based on other states' experiences. I note that it doesn't say that it doesn't make it harder, make you do more work to actually get those measures on the ballot. And I think it's not unreasonable to think that having to go to the four corners of the state and everywhere in between is, at least at some level, more difficult than not having to do so. Regarding, let's see, Mr. Forsyth's point about including the 5% statewide requirement that currently exists in the title, that was considered and discussed, I think, quite a bit at the initial hearings. I think that, in fact, I think I initiated that discussion. And the conclusion then was that, you know, we typically talk about the changes to the law and don't reiterate existing law. So while I do think it's informative, I'm not sure it's entirely appropriate to reflect that in the title. The final last thing I'll say for now is just I do think we need to tweak the language we've changed just a little bit, because it sort of implies, it can be read to sort of say that a petition qualifies for the ballot when it's actually the constitutional amendment. And what I would suggest is, instead of saying on line four to qualify for the ballot, let's see, that we say that a petition be signed by at least 2% of the registered electors who reside in each state Senate district for the amendment to be placed on the ballot. And I'd like to add for consideration by the voters, although if people want to argue that that's redundant and unnecessary, I'll certainly listen to it.
I like the change, and I don't have strong feelings about for consideration by the voters. And I agree with the points that the chair just made, and additionally would point out that in this Exhibit D, this doesn't address the specific percentage requirement and whether that can, that may or may not impact which measures end up on the ballot. And certainly you can imagine having a very high percentage requirement in each district, and that actually could impact which measures end up on the ballot. So I think this is the PDF is interesting, but I don't think ultimately it's germane to the particular title that we're addressing.
All right. Mr. Weiser.
D. Weiser, for the record. I would submit that we don't necessarily need for consideration by the voters if it's on the ballot. It seems implicit. but in general, we don't have any objection to the change.
I'd probably take it out, but again, I don't feel strongly about it.
Okay. Steve, I think we can just cut off after ballot in the new language. All right, with that, we're ready to just, let's adopt that change and just clear it. All right, if there's nothing else, I'll read the title into the record. That we're now considering an amendment to the Colorado Constitution, making it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution by requiring that any petition for a citizen-initiated constitutional amendment be signed by at least 2% of the registered electors who reside in each state Senate district for the amendment to be placed on the ballot, and increasing the percentage of votes needed to pass any proposed constitutional amendment from a majority to at least 55% of the votes cast if the amendment adds words or numbers to the Constitution.
It's a little wordy, but I'm not sure there's much we could do about that. Ready for a motion?
Yes, and I think we may, I'm not sure, the procedure's a little tricky with three of you. I think the motion is probably to deny the motions except to grant Mr. Forsyth to the extent that we've amended the language. Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so I would move that with initiative 2015-16, number 95, that we deny the motions for rehearing, except to the extent that we grant Mr. Forsyth's motion and amend the language as shown on the screen and as was just read into the record.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. We're now ready for number 96. I believe we start with
the record, D. Weiser with a law firm Butler Snow. On behalf of the proponents with me today are the designated representatives, Greg Brophy and Dan Gibbs.
Okay. Just a second. Who wants to go? Excuse me. Is one of the, who wants to go first in terms of motions for rehearing? Does anyone have anything to add besides what's in your motions?
Stephen, you may want to keep 95 available in case we want to copy some of that same language in 96 and or 97.
Okay.
Sorry, 95.
All right. It sounds like there are no comments from anyone on 96. And, okay. Sorry, just finding my things. And this is, if I recall correctly, the same as 95, except that it has the
repealer language in there?
Yeah, it has the, sorry, too much paper in front of me again.
It's the last clause in your title,
yes,
relating to,
okay,
removing
so
language.
Okay, so that's the only difference.
This is Mark Gruskin, by the way, for the record.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it, Mr. Gruskin. Okay, so title reads, do we get the change from 95 in there?
I'll put that in just one moment.
Thank you.
And we may also need to add the change from 93.
Yes. Thanks for catching that.
Looks like you may need constitutional amendment and only to remain in 96.
Does it look like we've got it all now?
Okay, then currently the title for proposed initiative 2015-16 number 96 reads as follows: an amendment to the Colorado Constitution making it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution by requiring that any petition for a citizen-initiated constitutional amendment be signed by at least 2% of the registered electors who reside in each state Senate district for the amendment to be placed on the ballot, and increasing the percentage of votes needed to pass any proposed constitutional amendment from a majority to at least 55% of the votes cast, unless the proposed constitutional amendment only repeals, in whole or in part, any provision of, just that from needs to be changed to an of, or the from just needs to be removed.
On line 7.
Line 7 of the Constitution.
Line 7. There you go.
All right. Mr. Weiser.
For the record, D. Weiser, we have no objection to those changes.
Thank you.
All right, I'll go ahead and move that we grant the motions for rehearing and amend the language of the title as reflected on the screen and as just read into the record and deny them in all other respects.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, that takes us to the last one, proposed initiative 2015-16, number 97.
Mr. Weiser. Yes, for the record, D. Weiser from the law firm Butler Snow, representing the proponents. With me are the designated representatives, Greg Brophy and Dan Gibbs.
All right. Besides what's been filed in the motions, do any of the persons who filed motions for rehearing have any comments on this one? It's Mr. Griskin.
Only to make clear, Mr. Chair, that the record should reflect for number 97 all of the testimony and exhibits for 96, 95, 94, 93, and likewise for 96 for all the preceding measures and 95 for the preceding measures and 94 for the preceding measure.
Thank you, Mr. Kruskin. We will, in fact, incorporate by reference everything before into subsequent initiatives today. All right. So this one is very straightforward. Are there any comments on or objections to the title as was set last time?
My only comment would be I think we should copy the language in to be placed on the ballot. Yeah, for the amendment to be placed on the ballot.
All right, we can adopt that one, Steve. Thank you. All right, then the title now reads as just amended: an amendment to the Colorado Constitution making it more difficult to amend the Colorado Constitution by requiring that any petition for a citizen-initiated constitutional amendment be signed by at least 2% of the registered electors who reside in each state Senate district for the amendment to be placed on the ballot. All right.
I would move that we deny the motions for rehearing, other than to grant Mr. Forsyth's motion for a rehearing to the extent that we added the language at the end of proposed initiative 2015-16, number 97. As reflected on the screen and as read into the record.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. With that, I believe that concludes our business. And title board is adjourned at 2:45 p.m.